These are the stories that I think you need to know about today, and they're important. There has been a massive, deadly, somewhat conflictive car bombing in Delhi that could lead to very severe consequences, and we have the very latest details. There are signs that the Trump administration has finally reached its limit, maybe its boiling point, with Volodymyr Zelensky. So what are those signs? I'm going to tell you what the specific signs are. Also, an exclusive report from Bangladesh involving U.S. interference by USAID, as well as Bill and Hillary Clinton. This is crazy what you're about to hear about them. They are going to get the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and the question tonight is about terrorism. Is that what happened in Delhi? And if so, my goodness, what is this going to lead to? Important questions that many around the world, from Moscow to Washington to Beijing, are now very concerned about. Okay, here's the scene. It's been wild. I don't know if you've seen these pictures, but it's nuts. As we look at some of these images, it was carnage and chaos. It's not just a little car bombing. This thing was vast. It's huge, with ammonium nitrate. Let me tell you what we've been able to decipher so far as we look at these crazy pictures. What a terrible scene. The car bombing occurred in a very, very crowded part of Delhi near the Red Fort metro station. That location obviously was picked on purpose because it is a very dense population there and a lot of people on the sidewalks and streets. So far, 12 people are dead, but look, who knows? We can expect that that number's probably going to go up because it's been going up all day long. The case is now officially being filed as a terror investigation by India's chief agency for these matters. That's called the NIA, or the National Intelligence Agency of India, similar to the FBI in the United States. There are credible reports that the agency already is looking into involvement of a Pakistan-based terror group that is called Jaish-e-Mohammed. Now, so far, as far as I've been able to tell, and we've been looking into this thing all day and reading reports and talking to people, Indian media sources, including the New Indian Express, are reporting that a letter linking the group has been discovered by investigators, and they have been reporting those findings throughout the course of the day. Now, I want you to take a look at something else. I want you to take a look at these images. See that right there? That is the car. That's the car that exploded. It's a Hyundai 120. And what you're seeing there is the image of the car before it blew up, because people had taken pictures of it. And you could barely make out, but there are images. You see a guy's face coming out of the side of the car there, right? That car has been blown up since. But for clarity, they're going in tight now and trying to see who is that person or who are those people that are inside that car, right? Now, let me tell you something else. We understand investigators may already know who those people are, okay? Let me show you another image. Both images and the tracking of the car have been traced back to this guy, Dr. Umar Mohammed. He is suspected to have been in that car. In fact, that may be him peeking out the window there. See him? Match the eyes. Match the hair. That's what sources are saying. Umar was in the car for hours before the explosion. Meanwhile, both police and intelligence sources are suggesting that Umar is linked to a terror module which had been busted in Farabadab earlier that same day, where a large haul of explosives, including ammonium nitrate, by the way, which is, you know, something which is extremely explosive, which has been used in other deadly terrorist attacks in the past, including the big famous one in the middle of the United States. So they found ammonium nitrate and they found detonators and were recovered in a bust they did just before this at the same location where he apparently is. Now, obviously, all of this is going to be confirmed with further DNA tests, but that is what is being reported up to now by credible Indian media outlets like the Times of India. Of course, the most important question is whether there is or will be a direct link to Pakistan. And the answer to that question is, it's too early to tell. It's just too early to tell. And frankly, let me just be honest with you, journalistically speaking, it would not be responsible to make any direct links at this time. But I will tell you this, as we follow this story, and, you know, it's the information, a lot of this information is still fresh, so we're kind of going through it. We expect a lot more to come in. We're going to be joined here in a little bit by our correspondent, Runjun Sharma, to share more information. Okay, let's talk about Ukraine now. There have been a lot of signs along the way, and I think you probably have picked up some of these signs yourself, that the Trump administration is souring, right? They're getting tired, if not just downright fed up with Volodymyr Zelensky. We've seen that at the White House, in meetings they had. You know when I really saw it, though? When it seemed like it was really obvious? This weekend, by this moment, where Mr. Trump infuses or pushes Prime Minister Viktor Orban, it seemed, to say this.
So the only pro-peace government is the United States government and the small Hungary in Europe anyway. All the other governments prefer to continue the war because many of them think that Ukraine can win on the front line, which is a misunderstanding of the situation. So it's a complicated issue. We will discuss it. It requests not just 2 minutes to respond to your question, but rather than our lecture. Sorry, not to continue more than
that. To both of you.
So you would say that Ukraine cannot win that war?
You know, miracle can happen.
Yeah, that's right.
So do you get the feeling that Trump was asking him a question that Trump already knew the answer to? And do you get the feeling that Trump felt like he wanted Orban to say it because he wasn't comfortable saying itself? And do you get the feeling that Trump knows that those reporters in the White House are too stupid or too cowardly to ask that question, so he did it himself? Because it seemed obvious to me. But now there's another one that makes me, another situation that makes me kind of scratch my head, maybe others as well, and ask this. Why is the FBI investigating the Ukrainian government for corruption, right? Now, I know why they should do it, right? I know why they should do it. It's because some $300 billion of U.S. taxpayer resources have been sent to Zelensky, and me, as one of those taxpayers, hell, I'd love to know, what the hell did they do with all that money? Somebody sticking it in their pocket over there? Still, you got to ask this question. Why is the United States investigating a supposed ally? Ukraine's an ally of the United States. Why is the FBI investigating corruption in Ukraine, right? Well, that appears to be what's going on. And here's the story. Let me share it with you. So there's the headline. There is Timur Mindich. He's a longtime ally, the guy with the yellow circle around his head. He's a longtime ally of Ukrainian strongman Volodymyr Zelensky. He fled the country. He just left. He's disappeared. And he did so while being investigated. And according to the reporting by Ukrainskaya, this is one of the sources there, Pravda, Ukrainskaya Pravda, he did so after somebody in the government called him and tipped him off and said, hey, your home is about to be raided. You better get the hell out, which he did. That in and of itself proves that there's some level of corruption, right? When somebody can tell you what the government is doing before anybody else knows. By the way, here's what's important. So this investigation is being conducted by NABU. That's the well-known Ukraine National Anti-Corruption Bureau. And it's reportedly part of a much wider investigation, also conducted jointly by the FBI. Look, I don't know. But it sounds to me like somebody in Washington is creating a justification for possible future actions, like maybe an excuse to get rid of Zelensky. I don't know what those actions could be in full clarity. But as we witness what is appearing to be happening right now in Ukraine, which is obviously the worst of times right now for the Ukraine military, everybody's reporting that, as well as the worst of times right now probably for Mr. Zelensky himself. You tell me. But consider this. Consider this well-known comedic expression. This is you'll know this if you're American, and if not, you'll still find it interesting. It was made famous by a famous American singer in Motown. His name was Marvin Gaye. It was also made famous by comedian Bill Cosby on his show, and it goes like this.
I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out.
I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out, referring to a parent yelling at their kids. Now, think of those words in relation to Zelensky. Who put Zelensky in power? And who might now just decide to take him out? Now to another story that very much involves India again. A lot of India in the news today. May or may not be linked specifically to India, but we think you should know this. I'm talking about Bangladesh, because we're going to take you now to Bangladesh. Beautiful country, very fertile country, historically caught in the crossfire between both Pakistan and India, constantly maligned by foreign intervention, mostly by the worst perpetrators of this kind of thing, of course, the British. What a surprise. Who haven't they messed with? They were also messed with, by the way, badly by the Japanese, Bangladesh was, during and prior to World War II. So let me put it up on a map. Here it is. There it is. That's the map where you can see how it sits. It's carved out. It was carved out and turned into a country by the British. Originally, it was called East Pakistan, did you know? Then it changed its name to Bangladesh, or Land of Bengals, like the tiger. Since then, it's been more allied with India. Okay, so with all that explanation behind, what's the deal with Bangladesh? Here it is. We have an exclusive report that we want to share with you tonight, which seems to suggest that once again, Bangladesh has encountered interference or intervention as it has throughout its history, this time at the hands of a foreign power. This time that foreign power is the United States. Let me be a little more exact, though. It's not just the United States. It's an agency inside the United States called USAID that has a reputation for going around the world dismantling democratically elected governments with bribes, with lies, and corruption, which is why the Trump administration has attempted to shut it down, by the way. You remember Marco Rubio saying so. We covered it. Now, what do they have to do with Bangladesh? Watch this exclusive interview with India's Foreign Minister of Education as he describes what happened during the riots of 2024 that led to the removal or the ousting of Bangladesh's prime minister.
The U.S. Embassy at that time, under the leadership of the envoy of that time, were showing every Friday pictures of mosques. Was it to win the hearts and minds of the extremists, or was it to incite them, or was it to prove that we are with you if you are to take up weapon and oust a secular government? Some NGOs, especially from the United States, USAID, for example, or International Republican Institute, they were running campaign against our government for a while. Since 2018. And I should say this, you know, there is a nexus between the Hillary Clinton family, the Clinton family, and the interim Yunus regime from a very long past. They were hell-bent on changing the government in Bangladesh, a stable government, especially after 2018. IRI was active, USAID's fundings were going to nowhere. $29 million came in 1 year to two NGOs. Where had that money gone to? It was destined for regime change activities. Rappers were being paid for, cultural activists were being paid for, the Hijra community, the transgender, the third gender community were being paid for. Whilst the extremists, the jihadi militants, were also being paid for to fight those liberal elements. So a chaos was carefully planned.
Carefully planned. What an amazing revelation that is. Joining us now to take us through this is correspondent Runjun Sharma. What a superstar correspondent she's turned out to be. Boy, I'll tell you, what a great scoop. What an amazing interview. Well done once again, Runjun. You do such wonderful work. We thank you so much for joining us. I have a million questions, but I guess the obvious question after listening to what he just said is why? What is it that USAID and others in Washington thought was so bad about Bangladesh that they needed to go in there and remove the prime minister and put in a new puppet government, if you will? Why? What was it?
That's exactly the question why I asked to the former Bangladeshi minister. He's also a close aide to the former prime minister who was ousted, Sheikh Hasina. Now, Rick, you see, the answer to it is very complicated because there wasn't just one reason why the U.S. or some in the U.S. had problems with her ruling Bangladesh. Number one, she wasn't taking the dictations from the U.S. Mm. Now, this is with respect to and this is another revelation in this interview that we got, they weren't very happy with the Bangladesh's stance when it comes to the Russia-Ukraine war. Mm. Bangladesh refused to war against Russia. This is something that irked the West. They also continued importing wheat and other goods from Russia. Food security is something which is very important to Bangladesh, and they're highly dependent on Moscow for that. That's something that irritated the hell out of the U.S. That's number one. Number two, remember that infamous St. Martin's Island. That's been talked about a lot. And reports suggest that, of course, that U.S. Wanted to base there. Sheikh Hasina said no and perhaps paid a price for that. So, several reasons. Once you don't listen to the dictations of the U.S., of the West, they'd rather put a puppet in place who would then follow their orders.
Yeah, and it sounds so much like what the United States did once in Ukraine, for example, in 2014, what the United States did just last year in Romania. And now we hear they did something similar in Bangladesh. You know, it's fascinating, but I think what's most fascinating to me was his description of how they created this conflictive situation by giving $1 million here to, he said, transgender community, $1 million for rappers, $29 million in all for different groups from these NGOs. And then they also paid off the other side who was fighting against those groups to create this conflagration inside the country. I mean, that sounds so horrible, but yet effective, I guess.
For sure. And you know, this riot which was orchestrated, there were careful killings, the former minister told me. And Rick, in these killings, he went on to say that the former envoy, the U.S. envoy, he basically announced 7 deaths. And he announced these 7 deaths, mind you, before they even happened. And it eventually turned out that 7 people died. So these kind of, coincidences do not really occur. And this is what the former minister, the close aide of Sheikh Hasina, was pointing out too, that there was a lot of mismatch in terms of, what the eye was seeing and what was actually happening in Bangladesh. This was a riot, a protest that was orchestrated. And then, of course, there was like you just mentioned, the transgender community. Then we're talking about rappers. All of these, they were being paid to do what? Rap against Sheikh Hasina, to sing against Sheikh Hasina, her government, to incite the people, take over their minds. And in fact, it wasn't just the money which was being pumped in. It's also the Western media there, the narrative they were using in Bangladesh. So all of that, it's a whole chaos. It's a whole money maze as well, because the aide of Sheikh Hasina also went on to say how the Soros, Biden and Clinton, that nexus, they were very, very close to Yunus. And It was very obvious that they were trying to put their puppet in place, and then that puppet, as I'm quoting the minister there, the former minister, now is taking orders from the U.S.
Yeah, and Prime Minister Hasina, we understand, is in India, where they're giving her some kind of safe harbor at this point. But what an you know, the way you explain it, and the way the former minister of education was able to take us through it, it's just. I think it's illustrative for our viewers to better understand just how Machiavellian these plots actually are. It's not as simple as just, we'll go in and we'll take out the prime minister. No, there's a whole host of things that have to be put into play, and then they watch them happen one by one. And I hate to say it because it's my country, but... the United States has been doing this for probably 100 years, all throughout Latin America, all throughout the Middle East, as we saw recently in Romania and again in 2014 in Ukraine. And now we hear from this excellent report that you've put together. They did the same thing in Bangladesh. Let me change the subject because we've got a lot of breaking news today. The story that we started with today, this situation in Delhi, with this horrific car bombing. I mean, the pictures make it look like it's not a car bombing. It makes it look like something much worse. It looks like they've nailed down who the perpetrators likely are. What we have not yet nailed down is whether they are directly linked, not tangentially linked, but directly linked to Pakistan. So here's my question. Since you cover this and this is your beat, if they do come up with a direct link to Pakistan, do you expect the reaction to be swift? Do you expect the reaction from the Modi government to be severe?
Oh, for sure. And for now, if you've heard the Prime Minister early this morning, he's in fact in Bhutan right now, but he did say he did call this a conspiracy. He also went on to say that those responsible will be brought to justice. So definitely the investigation, the probe which is happening at the moment, they are looking at it from the a terrorist angle as well. And it's very interesting because now the NIA, which is the National Investigative Agency in India, that agency, it's a central agency basically responsible for investigating also persecution of terrorism in also national security issues. That agency has taken over. What I hear from my sources is that India's home minister, who's responsible for the internal security, he's constantly now in touch with several security teams. And security also, Rick, has been, it's beefed up, not just in several parts of Delhi, but also adjoining cities as well.
Wow. You know, you do such a great job with this, and we really appreciate it, Runjun. Thanks so much for staying on top of the situation and for being able to explain it to us with so much clarity. Let us know if anything changes. Obviously, we're going to stay on top of the situation. We understand there's been another incident, this time in Pakistan. We're following that as well, and that may play into this. So if there's any developments, we'll be sharing with. Thank you once again, Runjun.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, I'm going to be talking to Garland Nixon. Now, let me tell you about Garland Nixon. He is an American from Washington, D.C. He's a retired police officer, veteran radio and television host. And he's here in Moscow. And you may have seen me with him in the past, because I've done interviews with him in the past, and he's appeared on RT. But he has a very interesting take on what's happening right now, specifically with the politics in the United States. You're going to hear from Garland Nixon when we come back. Do not go away. This is such a wonderful thing that we're about to do. You know, it's always exciting when another fellow American like me comes here and we get an opportunity to talk. And few are better than Garland Nixon. Our relationship goes way back. We've been working together, working on projects together. He's appeared on my show. I appear on his show. He had a very famous show in the United States in Washington, D.C. What else can I tell you about Garland Nixon? Former police officer. That's interesting. Turns into a journalist and performer on air, on television, on radio, appears on all the big networks. Started off as a Democrat, maybe still considers himself that, I don't know. He sounds more like a Republican these days, for what it's worth. And it's so great to have you here, my friend.
Well, thank you. I'm actually a recovering Democrat. I'm an independent, but I'm... I think I've recovered.
You know, I got to tell you something. There's something great that's happening in our country right now. Something great is happening in America, and that is people are discovering the middle.
Yes.
And I'm hearing Republicans sound like Democrats in some ways, and Democrats sound like Republicans in other ways. For example, I just interviewed yesterday Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich is a Democrat, but he's extremely anti-war, which is what I'm hearing from most Republicans today.
Well, you know, and I saw something the other day. I saw Candace Owens, who is a staple on the right, interview Norm Finkelstein, who's
right.
a socialist. We're seeing Jimmy Dore, and, you know, I could put the names together. We're seeing people who are opposed to war, people who are opposed to violence, people who believe that the government of a country should look out for the people of its country and not get involved in all kinds of foreign entanglements. And for many of them, it doesn't matter what their ideology is. I think that's truly the beautiful thing that's happening in America.
Because for the longest time in America, tell me if I'm wrong, there was these wedge issues, and the Democrats had their wedge issues. I don't know, immigration, gay rights, whatever, make it up. And then the Republicans had their web issues. You know, whatever, transphobia stuff and whatever it is. And you had to live in those compartments. And today I'm finding people are breaking out of those compartments.
Well, I think what's happened is this. People are discovering that these weren't their compartments, that they were boxes, dare I say,
yes.
prisons, mental prisons that were created for them so that a dynamic could be created where regular everyday people who had everything in common could fight amongst each other. And they're waking up to that and realizing that we have more in common than these crazy elite neocons who want to drag us into all kinds of wars and problems to benefit them. I think it's beautiful.
But it's profitable for those people who are dragging us into those compartments. They wanted us to stay here so we would fight with these guys and talk about stupid stuff rather than talk about real stuff. They didn't want people looking at Israel and saying, why are we sending $5 billion over there? Or looking at Ukraine and saying, why are we sending $300 billion over there? They'd rather we talk about some guy who dressed up like a woman yesterday and played basketball at some school in Kansas.
Well, I think we should
not that I'm in favor of that, but,
yeah.
but it's not as big an issue.
Right. I think you and I should take some credit. I'll be honest with you. It is alternative media. It was the things that you did when you were in Washington, D.C., that I did and I'm still doing on my radio program in D.C. It's the alternative media, be it on YouTube or Rumble, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, it's Ritter, it's Napolitano, it's Davis, it's Tucker,
Larry Johnson,
McGregor.
All of us, yes.
All of those
and that's
people.
What's happening. And people are turning away from the traditional media because no one there speaks for them. And now they're looking at people who have everything in common with them, who speak to them, or are trying to be honest. We may be wrong at times, but at least they know we're trying to be honest. And if we figure out that we have something wrong, we'll say, oh, I missed that one.
Yeah.
What about this? The mainstream media doesn't do that because they're not coming up with ideas on their own. They're being given ideas and tropes to communicate to others, to mislead the public.
They're fed. By the way, I always like doing this for somebody who is new. I was kind of shocked when I first got to Moscow. At first, I was like weirded out, wondering or trying to figure out, like you do anywhere else, what it's all about. And then I started realizing, wow, in many ways, this place is what we or what many people say they'd like the United States to be more like. What are your impressions so far?
Well, there were a number of impressions from Moscow. Number one is, it's not as tense as I'm accustomed to. You know, when I was at Fox and I go to New York, you get off the train at New York and all you hear is horns honking, people scream, get out of the way, you know, pushing and shoving. The people here are respectful. I came to my hotel at midnight and there was a guy that sat sweeping up leaves.
Yeah.
He was cleaning leaves.
Yeah.
The place is clean.
They wash the streets here like twice a day.
Well, I don't have to trip over homeless people. I don't have beggars following me around, drug addicts, you know, trying to rob me. It's safe.
Yeah.
It is what we say we want America to be. That's what I see in Moscow.
Ain't that weird? Did you expect that? Because I didn't. I mean, I'd heard, oh, it's a really great city. And it's like, yeah, everybody says that. But it really is.
Only in that I had talked to my friends, you know, Larry Johnson and Scott and these people. I talked to these people, and they had communicated this to me. So because but I had to experience it for myself because you don't know. And you got here. I'll tell you another thing. The people are very patriotic, but not in an aggressive way. The patriotism is like this. I love my country. It's not like I love my country and I hate yours.
Right.
We love our country. We're proud of there's memorials everywhere. They're proud of the sacrifices and pain that they've had to suffer to get where they are today. It's very impressive. The Russian people are extremely impressive.
And I don't know if you noticed, but there's a million statues and memorials.
Yes.
None of them are for politicians.
Right.
They're for writers, playwrights, literature, poets, soldiers. They're not, in fact, those guys who, like the Soviet guys, for example, you barely see Lenin, although you see him.
Yes, yes.
You certainly don't see statues of Khrushchev and Brezhnev and or any of these guys, Stalin a little bit, but it's not like in the United States where if there's a statue, it's some guy who's a politician.
Something interesting about the military statues, you know, there are the horses, the generals on horses and things like that, but there are a number of memorials that are just to the common soldier.
Yes.
I find that interesting. We don't have a lot of that, maybe the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier or something.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of respect shown to the simple farmer or industrial worker that sacrificed his life for the country. And I think that's something we don't see that I think we should do. There's some of it, but not like here in Russia. That's ingrained in the patriotism, the sacrifices that have been made by common people.
All right, let me try and take you through all the big breaking stories
all
and
right.
all the things that are
all
going right. on right now. I know this is all fresh in your mind. Let's start with Ukraine. It's starting to look like this thing is about to break, and it's breaking kind of Russia's way. I feel bad for the Ukrainian people, but I want this to end for them because I think they've been used.
Yes.
I think they've been made proxies, especially by the Europeans. What's your take on the situation?
Well,
right
I'll
now?
Start here. You know, I used to go to this restaurant, Maravana, in D.C., and a lot of Ukrainian people would come that had relatives. And they said, we talked to our families, they just want it over. They want the war to stop. They want to go back to their life. What you're not told in the West is that Ukraine is a concentration camp. It's not a country. They grab people off the street, beat them up, and drag them to the front. That's not patriotism. That's not a country. That's kidnapping. And the Ukrainian people, many of them, you know, outside of the Banderites, but that's a small part, many of them are victims of this. And I believe that when this conflict ends, there will be a lot of Ukrainians who are angry at the West, who are angry at NATO and say, why did you do this to us? I think there are a lot of them that will realize that Russia's not their enemy.
Are you fascinated as I am by Zelensky? I think he's a fascinating guy. He is hanging on by a thread, and it's almost like a desperate kind of measure that he's in right now. Because, I mean, all the signs are bad, and this guy's still sitting there going, oh, no, we're actually... He reminds me... Remember Baghdad Bob?
Yes.
During the Iraq War, he'd say, oh, yeah, we're winning the war. No, you're not. I mean, it almost seems laughable sometimes, his news conferences and his visits with other leaders, where he proclaims that Ukraine is destroying Russia and winning the war. It's kind of weird, isn't it?
Well, it's farcical. Now he's telling us that there's no soldiers encircled, that they've actually encircled the Russians, and the Russians are running for their lives. But, you know, you realize why they chose him, because he's an actor.
Yeah.
And he comes across to me as simply a proxy. He is an actor. I personally think he is just an MI6 plant. And he does not represent the Ukrainians. He does not act in the best interest of the Ukrainians. And I think he is an actor that has acted like a crazy person so long, I think he actually believed. You know, there's a saying about the European chihuahuas. If you play a chihuahua Doberman long enough, you'll think you're a Doberman. But you're really still a chihuahua. I think he thinks he's the leader of Ukraine. He's not the leader of Ukraine. He's an actor that's doing what he's told to the detriment of Ukraine.
Israel, what do you think?
It's a terrible situation. What's interesting is in America, something that I see, Israel's in real trouble in America. The future of Israel is not bright.
They should be.
Yeah, the Democratic Party The Democrats and people who, there are many people who left the Democrats over the Israeli situation, but that I saw somewhere upwards of 90% of the people in the Democrats oppose the government's policies towards Israel.
90% of those under the age of 35 in America despise Israel for what they're doing right now.
Yes, and now the Republicans are having a civil war over Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And the Israelis don't seem to understand the trouble they're in. They think that they can buy CBS and Paramount, that they can throw some people off of YouTube, and that's going to fix it. They are in deep trouble, and they are in denial about just how much trouble they're in. But the government of Israel has made terrible decisions.
They're going after my friend, your friend, well, our friends, Tucker Carlson.
Yes.
They're singling out Tucker Carlson. They're singling out Candace Owens. They're singling out all of these people that you and I know.
Yes.
Are friends of ours. And they think they could destroy them with this kid Shapiro, for example. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you know,
I don't think you're going to minimize Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and this movement. It's already too strong.
You know, I won't get into it, but I used to explain that this dynamic when I taught in our police academy. But basically the dynamic is this. As the group of true believers gets smaller and smaller, their belief gets more intense and more irrational. So now it's getting to the point where the only thing they've got left is Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin. You know, the group of true believers is getting so small that the ones that are left are so intense in their belief that they're irrational. And it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, I think this is going to become a problem for Mr. Trump. I think the Trump administration is going to have to come to terms with all the people in MAGA who are asking this question of Mr. Trump. You told us, sir, that we were always with you going to be America first, but you haven't quite fulfilled that promise with this situation with Israel. And I think either Trump or Vance at some point are going to have to pay the piper on this.
I agree, because what we're looking at now, and I think it's a wonderful thing, you know, the Democrats, oh, the MAGA people, they're a bunch of crazies. They don't know anything. You know, they seem to be a very rational group. They seem to want peace. Mm-hmm. What are they upset about? Foreign entanglement.
Yes.
Even though I'm not a conservative, I recognize that the history of conservatives in America, they used to call them the non-interventionalists, but there's a strain of conservatism that's growing again that wants peace, that doesn't want wars, that doesn't want foreign entanglements. That group is growing, and the pushback they're getting from the Israelis is making them, or the Zionists, whatever you want to call it, is making them grow. But you're right. The Trump administration, they promised these people that. And these people are not taking no for an answer. I think that's democracy. They're holding them accountable. They're saying, we voted for something, and we will not take no for an answer. I think that's very healthy.
Are you worried about our country right now with the... You mentioned at the outset of our conversation that there's... You almost sense... I don't think this is your word, my word, but I'm using my word, not yours. A sense of antagonism in America right now. That there's this...
Anxiety.
Friction.
Yes.
Everybody's angry all the time.
Well, I would say this. There's great dysfunction in the government, but there is a good thing. The reason there's dysfunction in the government is because the political class and the ruling elite do not represent the people. You know, one thing I've found here in Russia, and if you talk to a lot of people in China, these countries, the people are somewhat aligned with their government because they may have their complaints, but they do feel like the government represents them. And to some extent, the government's considering their needs. Americans have lost that. They feel like our government's out there. They don't care about us. The positive side is what we're seeing, again, like with the MAGA movement, et cetera, we're seeing now people waking up and saying, oh, I don't feel that my government represents me. But they're not laying down about it. They're saying, I'm going to make some noise. And the great thing is, I have to go back to this, there's alternative media. There is a medium for people to have a discussion that don't want to use the standard tropes.
You talk about liking the intentions of the MAGA movement.
Yes.
I agree with you.
Yes.
I'll tell you, I like the intentions of the Mandami movement.
Yes.
So here's a movement... you know, idealistically from the left, Mandani. And here's a movement idealistically from the right, MAGA. I find in many ways it's the same movement.
Yes. Now,
it's a pro-people movement.
Yeah. It's kind of like after 2008, you had Occupy Wall Street, which is kind of a left movement, and you had the Tea Party, which, might I add, eventually transformed into MAGA. But what you had was they were both groups were angry about what? about the bailouts. Both of them were angry about the bailouts, mm-hmm. but it ended up kind of dysfunctional, and one died out and one transformed into MAGA. But it showed that there is a potential for that. Now, back then, they didn't have any way to connect because there wasn't the social media presence that they are. And now it's what we talked about earlier. There's a medium for them to connect. There are those people, such as me, who are very suspect about Mondami himself because we've been burnt by Bernie and AOC and they ended up supporting the Ukraine conflict or whatever. Sure. But notwithstanding him as an individual, any pushback against the mainstream is a good thing. And we can work with that. And if he flops, he flops. If he ends up being a puppet for the man, so be it. But it's good to see some pushback, and I think we can work from
that. And we have to avoid the labels. For example, the right will call Mondani a communist.
Yeah.
Right? He's not a communist.
No.
The left will call all MAGA people fascists. They're not fascists. In fact, if there's one thing in common as a skill set or a point of view that I respect in any organization, be they from the left or the right, it's an adherence to how to make the life of the average American better.
Yes.
How do I improve your ability to take care of your wife or your children? How do I improve your ability to pay less for your housing?
Yes.
How do I improve your ability to have health care? These are things that ever since I've been in this part of the world, traveling through the Middle East and China, India, Turkey, and certainly here in Russia, I see governments in this part of the world that adhere to that principle, or at least try. They fail. They're also corrupt. But how can I try and make things better for the people of this country? I don't think that's done enough by our leaders and our politicians.
Yes, and I'll add this, and this is critical. What people want in a country, in a government, is a consistent set of standards. I want to know what I can do, what I'll get in trouble, like a child and a dad.
Yeah.
I want to know what I can and can't do, what I'll get in trouble for, what I won't get in trouble for. If you notice, under, as example, the Biden administration, I think that's one of the reason they were so rejected. One week they'd say, you can say this on Twitter or Facebook, and you'd say this. Mm-hmm. The next week they'd say, well, you can't say that.
That's the reason I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, and you too.
I was thrown off Twitter, you know.
Yeah. So because of Biden, we're not allowed to practice journalism,
exactly,
free speech in America.
And I think one of the things that people find so upsetting is this kind of totalitarian inconsistency that says, we'll decide what you could say. And that could change from week to week. Even if a government is kind of oppressive, if they give you a set of standards and you know, if I step outside of these lines, I'll be in trouble. But as long as I stay here, people want standards. And now in America, especially under the Biden administration, it was... the way I like to put it was an arbitrary application of the law as opposed to a standard of laws.
Yeah.
You know, it was just arbitrary application.
I agree with you. If what you're saying is you think things are better now with the Trump administration, I agree with you with the exception of Israel.
Yes. In some ways, Trump can be arbitrarily. But I do think, and I'm not a Trump fan.
Yeah.
But I would say... yes, things are better under Trump. There's still things that he's doing that I really don't like.
Of course.
But there's just...
There's things Putin does people don't like. There's things she does people don't like.
I mean, there's just no way I could accept the Biden administration for another 4 years. And I don't think anybody could.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they got blown out.
Well, I mean, God, toward the end, it was sad.
It was a farce.
He was almost dead.
Yeah, it was. And
I mean,
look at the candidate they
put
forward.
You want me to do the Biden walk for you?
I mean,
it was like...
And I hate to say it, he was probably more sensible than the candidate that he put forward afterwards. I mean, she was the only one that was more brain dead than him was Kamala Harris. It was sad.
Why was she such a bad candidate?
Well, you know, it's the ultimate... Because... the Democratic Party didn't choose, didn't choose the best person in the room, but it's even worse. They didn't allow the people to have any input. It's like 2016. Yeah. If what should have happened in 2016? Here's the truth. The Democrats wanted Bernie. It should have been Bernie versus Trump and whoever won. Because that's who the people wanted.
Yeah.
The Democrats don't allow the voters to have any input. What I'll say about the Republicans is this. It was healthy because... you know, I didn't vote for either of them, but the Republicans wanted Trump. Their leadership didn't. the people got the one they wanted.
Yeah.
I think that's democracy. That's healthy.
Do you, maybe you'll agree with me or not, but I was just thinking as I was asking you this question and I was listening to your answer, that Kamala Harris was in many ways a Madison Avenue candidate. They put her there because she checked certain boxes. And what she lacked was a soul. And you could hate Trump or love Trump. I hate him and love him at the same time sometimes. But he has a soul.
Yeah.
You know who that guy is. And you know what he thinks sometimes, most of the time.
Yeah.
I think Kamala Harris was, okay, she's a Democrat. She's kind of pretty. She's black.
Sometimes.
Sort of.
She was Indian first, though.
Yeah, she's Indian.
She was Indian when she needed to be. Then
she
was
Indian,
black.
She's Indian. She's black. She's Jamaican. She's all of these things. So somebody in Madison Avenue, you know, where they make, like, the people who make commercials. For those of you watching us who don't know what we mean by Madison Avenue, that's a street in New York where all the advertising people live. And those are the people who create these image icons that we all then follow. It's the soap we buy. It's the car we buy or drive, et cetera. And somebody sat down and said, ah, perfect. We'll run her. Nobody asked her if she was smart or even got that answer fulfilled, but they chose her anyway.
Well, and in fact, that's extremely accurate, but actually, and this was highly reported on, it was in the Hamptons, which is where all of the rich people in New York, they go down to the shore and they have their mansions down there, right? And they literally had a meeting in the Hamptons and chose her. But again,
did they really?
Yes.
I didn't know
about
that.
They literally had a meeting there. There were a bunch of the Hillary Clinton's people had a meeting and chose her.
What a surprise.
Yes.
I'm shocked.
Yes. But the reality is this. Again, what do we get to? The people didn't have any input. And you know what? They didn't show up to vote for her because she wasn't their candidate. So why should they? And the Democratic Party doesn't get that. The truth is, the Republican Party doesn't get it. I remember hearing...
But they're better at it.
Well, I remember hearing a Republican upset, and he said, I wish we had the methods that the Democrats have to... Basically, to stop Trump, because they were
right,
they said, we don't have superdelegates. We don't have any way to stop him. So the people got who they wanted. And we can criticize him, but I won't criticize the process. And as you said, sometimes Donald Trump does things and I say, man, that's great. And then sometimes I go, you know, the forehead right here, the hand hits you right in the head.
Exactly.
Like, what in the world did he do that for?
Well, you know, it's funny what you're saying, though. When it comes to Democratic candidates recently, think about it. It was Hillary Clinton. I mean, she has to be one of the worst candidates ever. I mean, just from an appeal standpoint, she was absolutely horrible. And then, am I missing somebody besides? Oh, Joe Biden.
Clinton, Biden, Harris.
And Harris. Oh, that's my God. That's the first time I've actually made that list in my mind. Those are three horrible, horrible candidates.
Yeah.
There's not a lick of smarts, as they say in the South, between the three of them.
The name, as soon as I said those three names, the thing that popped into my mind was Curly, Moe, and Larry. You know, for those people I don't know, there was a comedy team called the Three Stooges.
But they could control those, but they weren't, they were put there by the administrative state, I think.
Well,
they were chosen.
Angle, yeah, from that angle, you got to add Barack Obama. Because they were constructs. They were concepts that were put together by wealthy...
Anointed, not appointed.
The political
appointed
class. Yes, the political class put them together and said... Because they thought she was Obama. They're like, hey, she's black and she's attractive. That'll work. Man, she wasn't too bright, first of all. Obama, he was a puppet for Wall Street, but he was very smart. So he could get elected.
Yeah.
She wasn't very smart. But that's what the Democratic Party
is. That's interesting what you just said. The difference between Kamala Harris and Barack Obama is they were both attractive, easily put together as candidates on Madison Avenue and the administrative state. But one of them was able to walk the walk because he was smart. Smart
yes, enough. Extremely intelligent.
But he sold out completely. Yeah. But he was smart and she wasn't. When she was interviewed, she came off as...
Vacuous. Empty.
Yeah.
Nobody home. Lights on, but nobody home.
Yeah, like, what did you just say? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, she wasn't able to follow an enthymeme the way you and I are doing it right
and
now.
And I'll add this. She came across as an insult to the voters. She was an insult. You put her out there, you say, you like her, and the voters say, well, no, we don't. Yes, you do. It was like they're trying to tell us, you're supposed to like her.
Yeah.
You're supposed to accept her. You're supposed to support her. And when she lost, the Democrats got angry at the voters. They said, we lost because you didn't show up. How dare you? They suffered the effrontery that we should exist.
Yeah. It's a great conversation, Garland Nixon. It's so nice to have you here. I'm so glad you came in and paid me a visit. And I guarantee you that tens of millions of people all over the world are going to say, hey, that was a really cool conversation. You guys look like you're friends. You know why? We are. It's
like... Yeah, well, I'm having a great time. I really love Moscow. And someone gave me a special reserve bottle of vodka to take home.
Did they really?
Yes. But I said, you know, those my alcoholic friends, it's too good for them.
I'm whatever
gonna
save, you do.
I'm going to save it for Christmas.
Whatever you do, don't drink a lot. Don't drink it all at once. And it's nice for you to be spending time with Scott Ritter. You know, he's a friend of this show's. I'm a fan of Scott. He's a little over the top sometimes. But you know what? His heart's in the right place. And he's done the right thing repeatedly for his country, for the United States of America. And now I think he's doing it for the world. And so are you. And I think that's all we can do when we leave this earth is say, I tried to make this place... the world a better place for our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah, Scott's an intense guy. You know, he's very humble. He says, oh, I'm just a Marine. He's brilliant. Read his writing.
He is
he's
brilliant.
He's a brilliant
he is
man.
Brilliant.
And he plays humble. You know, yeah. He plays stuff, but he's a brilliant guy.
You don't get intense. To be a weapons inspector and be dumb.
No. No, yeah. But, you know, he's an American patriot.
Yes.
But he believes in humanity, and he loves the Russian people, and the Russian people love Scott.
Yeah, yeah, they do, and they should, because he's a good man, and so are you.
Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate you coming out. It's good to see you.
Yeah.
I thought we'd be running into each other here, of all places.
Oh, we're having a conversation just like old times.
Just like old times. Things just don't change after a while. Garland Nixon, my friend, thanks so much once again. And that's it for us. Let me say this. As you know, we do this every day here. We bring this show around the world, and for me, what I appreciate most is you. The fact that you let me into your home, the fact that you are here every day, the fact that tens of thousands of you will now write comments about this conversation I just had with Garland, and you'll do it on Journalistically Speaking with Rick Sanchez. It's on YouTube. It's growing like a monster. Oh, also, my ex page, Sanchez TV, go there as well. Tens of thousands of you there every night as well. And yes, I read what you write. So keep it coming. Thank you so much. Thank you for letting us into your home. I'll look for you next time. Good night.